Well, 50 years ago today, America's historic journey with the automobile took an adventurous detour.
Coming April 17th, the unexpected, the new Ford Mustang, brilliant new kind of car. A new generation of Fords for the new breed of Americans who want stick-shift action and room for four, who collect sports car badges and trading stamps, who want the elegance of a European touring car and, till now, had to settle for basic transportation. This is for them. This is Mustang.
Yes, on April 17th, 1964, Detroit's Ford Motor Company unveiled the Mustang at the New York World's Fair, trading stamps not included. Billed as the country's first affordable sporty car, the Mustang was among the first in a new generation of smaller, sleeker passenger cars, pony cars, that would soon be joined by imitators like the Chevrolet Camaro and the Pontiac Firebird. The pioneering model has become iconic. Its rich, eventful history is explored in a new book, Mustang and the Pony Car Revolution. Its author, Michael W.R. Davis, joins us now. Welcome to Current State, Mr. Davis.
Well, thank you. Good morning.
You were working at Ford on this date 50 years ago. As you look back on a half century of the Mustang, what's uppermost in your mind?
Well, actually, while I was working at Ford, I was at Ford's in-house competitor with Ford Division, which was the source of the Mustang. I was at Lincoln Mercury then, although earlier, I'd been working at Ford Division when the crucial step of killing an alternative vehicle was done by Lee Iacocca exactly a year before. And then he told his product planners what we needed was, which was a sporty car to compete with the Chevrolet Monza. And that was, in my mind, at least the beginning of the Mustang.
I have to ask, do you remember the day? Do you remember this day 50 years ago?
Yeah, I remember the day very distinctly, but not the date.
Okay.
I had been working on, I was a PR guy, and I had been working on the press materials for this new small car called the Cardinal for several weeks. And my boss came in and sat down and lit his pipe and said, Iacocca's killing the Cardinal, and I can't say over the air what my response was, but you can imagine.
And why was the Cardinal scrapped to make way for the Mustang?
Because Iacocca perceived it as I'll shorten it and say a frumpy car, and we needed something sporty to compete with the Monza.
Sounds like something Lee Iacocca would say.
Yeah, well, it was a little bit more colorful.
Let's talk about the Mustang itself. As someone who has owned five different Mustangs, what stands out most about this model over 50 years? Why has it prevailed for 50 years, do you think?
Well, it's a fun car, basically, and it was also... It was very economical at the time, and it still is if you don't start adding on high-performance engines and so on. It was originally sort of an all-things-to-all-people because you could have an economy version, a performance version, or a luxury version, according to which options you chose.
Do you have a favorite? Do you have a favorite of the five that you have owned?
Oh yes! In fact, we still have it in the family. My daughter has it. My oldest daughter, which was an '84 Turbo GT convertible, and I drove it for 10 years, and then my daughter asked for it 20 years ago as a wedding present, which I fixed it up, gave it to her. She still has it.
A lot of people think of the Mustang as groundbreaking. But your book takes a real historical approach to its creation. Aside from the Cardinal, did the sportier Mustang actually have any kind of predecessor?
Well, a lot of them, and as in my view, starting with the Model T Ford Runabout, which was an economical in its time, in the 1920s, a sporty low-priced car. In fact, it was the lowest-priced car ever mass-produced.
That was considered sporty in its time then?
Well, I don't think that word existed then, as far as I know, when applied to cars. But it was followed in the 1930s by rumble seat roadsters, which most all makers had. And that was definitely sporty. And the point is that it was not utilitarian like a station wagon, let's say, or even a plain old four-door sedan. So it was the idea of something that's just for, as it were, the ego of the driver and owner. It wasn't for carrying loads of luggage or children. Well, it was a four-place car, so you could actually, as long as you only had two children, you were okay.
You were supposed to have fun in a Mustang, though. It was supposed to be fun to drive a Mustang. That was the point.
Yes, exactly. And then that was all pre-war, and then including the styling of the original Lincoln Continental, which was a long hood and a short rear deck. And that definitely influenced the design, the appearance, in other words, of the Mustang when it first came out. And they've stayed to that pretty faithfully, which is, among other things, which accounts for its 50 years of continuous availability.
Yeah. What was the advertising like surrounding the release of the Mustang?
Well, like all the other marketing, it was quite innovative. I didn't remember the original one that you just played on the air, the one I liked best was the one they did in 1966, the most memorable one to my way of thinking, which was Six and the Single Girl. A book had come out a few months before, Sex and the Single Girl, so this was a play on it, and it was emphasizing the six-cylinder engine. So it was Six and the Single Girl, and you'd have to see it to appreciate it. You know, the not too beautiful young lady driving this convertible Mustang, and all the good looking guys giving her the once over.
Oh boy, I was around then. I don't remember that one, but we're talking with Mike Davis, the author of the new book Mustang and the Pony Car Revolution. Here today is the 50th anniversary of Ford's unveiling of the Mustang at the New York World's Fair. How successful were the sales of the first Mustang, Mike?
Well, they were overwhelming, far beyond anything that Ford had dreamed. And as I recall, Ford dealers took something like, either sold or took orders for 22,000 cars, Mustangs, on that opening day. First day it was officially on sale. And it was so successful on a continuing basis that Ford had to add two additional assembly plants. The original one was in Dearborn, in the Rouge plant, Dearborn Assembly Plant. Then they added a plant in Metuchen, New Jersey, and San Jose, California, in only a few months. And to do that is a tremendous undertaking. But it was to meet the demand. And then in 2 years' time, it sold a million Mustangs were sold. Just absolutely incredible. Particularly when matched against today's numbers of the top-selling cars.
I see.
For one model.
The styling of the car and the features on the car have, over 50 years, they've undergone inevitable changes. I mean, even the Mustang went through a rather clunky phase, didn't it,
yes,
for a while?
Unfortunately. Well, oddly enough, the car, and you're speaking of the Pinto-based Mustang, which was called the Mustang II, which was also Iacocca's inspiration, because he foresaw the need for a really more economical sporty car, and that was it from 74 through 78. And it actually initially sold very well, but the Mustang purists don't like it much.
What do you make of all the other pony cars that have come out in the aftermath of the Mustang, the Camaro and the Firebird,
right,
and all the others?
Well, only the Mustang has been continuously produced for all the 50 years. Camaro was out of production for 10 years or so. The Plymouth Barracuda is no more. There's no more Plymouth, no more Barracuda. Although Chrysler does have its the Dodge Challenger is its entry in the pony car market, and Camaro came back. Pontiac is no more. Even the Mustang's so-called sister car from Lincoln Mercury is no more because Mercury is no more. So there have been a lot of changes, except
the Cougar,
Mustang is still there. Yeah,
the Cougar, yeah.
Yeah, the Cougar, right.
Now, the car, to this day, 50 years later, the car enjoys a reputation for power. I mean, there's an awful lot of horsepower that goes into the, the highest powered Mustang.
Well, that's right. And that's more competitive with the Chevrolet Corvette, for example. That's part of the multiple personalities of the Mustang that have evolved over the years. But even in the very beginning, there was a high-performance option offered after a few months after the car was initially introduced. You had the which was economical for the time, six-cylinder engine, which had been scavenged from the Ford Falcon, which was a compact economy car introduced for 1960. In fact, that was part of the secret of getting the car to market and with quickly and with minimal investment. Was scavenging stuff from existing cars.
You think the Mustangs? You think the Mustang's good for another 50 years?
Well, who knows? The marketplace can change in an instant. And in fact, at one point, Ford was considering getting rid of the rear-wheel drive Mustang in favor of a Japanese-based front-wheel drive. And fortunately, I think the Mustang buyers didn't go for it. The planners realized that ahead of time, so that there was no break in the model years of Mustang.
This has been an awful lot of fun. We appreciate your time. Michael W.R. Davis is the author of the new book, Mustang and the Pony Car Revolution. It's 50 years ago today that the Mustang was unveiled at the New York World's Fair. Thanks, Mr. Davis.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.